Hi, I'm in Paris right now. It's Friday night in Paris, and I'm on a podcast.
Lucky you.
You're doing it wrong.
You're
You're
telling
doing
me.
and where's Jim today?
Jim's not with us today because Jim's in New York.
And on the floor of what was is it NASDAQ or and New
I
York
think he said
Stock?
it's, I think it's the NASDAQ, yes.
NASDAQ.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Waiting for
because
it to go public. Yes.
congratulations, Jim. You're not here. You're missed, but we all rooting for you. Anyway, so today I thought we'd talk about because this is March 28th, the day that CoreWeave's going public, and our fourth co-host, Jim Higgins, is their new CISO, and Jim's on the floor of NASDAQ and celebrating with the rest of his company. And so, Jill, you were talking about this, and in the last time that we met. How fast they went public and how fast they built that business. And AI is just like really disrupting everything. So these days you can build maybe a $1 billion business by one person or two people. So anything to reflect on that? And maybe we'll bring it back to security topic.
Yeah, I feel like right now is maybe the most exciting time in technology in 25 years since, the turn of the century when we were discovering websites and businesses were being invented every day. On the one hand, it's so exciting because like we've all chosen to live and work in Silicon Valley because we like that innovation culture. And it seems to be happening at a pace that we haven't seen. So it feels like a very exciting time. A few months ago, it was news every time a new LLM model was released. Now the pace of model release is happening so quickly, it's I guess not even news anymore. And that competition between these large companies that have massive valuations and a lot of cash, and they're just pouring it into the data centers and into working on these models. The amount of investment in innovation that's happening right now is incredible. And hopefully it's going somewhere positive.
But you're right. I mean, if you look at all the news, all we've heard about is every 2 weeks or every 3 week cycle around LLM releases, right? This company upleveled another company, but we constantly focused on the LLMs. In the enterprise space, right, you're starting to see kind of transition from AI chatbots or LLMs to now AI agents, right? But the way from a security perspective, we've been always looking is how do we actually get some guardrails around the risk within LLMs? But now as enterprises starting to look at whether it's chatbots or AI agents and starting to build applications that integrate with the AI, right? Now we have starts to think holistically, not just about LLM security, but we have to start thinking about all the traditional risks we always talked about, third-party risk, data risks, right? AI is just another way to think about third-party risk or data exfiltration, for example, or data leakage. But in a lot of ways, we don't have the right visibility in our own environments around AI, right? I heard something earlier this week. I was meeting with a company. They said that on average, when they do assessments right now around just doing asset inventory around AI, they see between 200 to 500 different applications that have AI type of functionality that they have no visibility into, right? So there's tremendous opportunity, but also a lot of risk purely because we don't know what users are using. And we need to build enough, not just detection capabilities, but guardrails around data leakage and other types of risks there.
Joe, you talked about how like a next release of LLM is no longer news, right? So could this follow the trajectory of many years ago? It used to be like Pentium release is like a big thing, right? Pentium one, Pentium two, and then it was not a big thing anymore. Nobody cared. Would it kind of follow that? Like model is just going to be operating system, just going to be people use it, and you don't care whether you use OpenAI or some other model. And what you may care is either the agent or the application you build on top. You think?
Well, you know what? I think for the rest of the world, that might be the case. But for those of us who work in security, it's not. Because every update changes everything again for us. If when you update it from Pentium 1 to Pentium 2 or whatever the upgrade path was, it didn't change what was there. It was just a new version of it, so to speak. But with the AI models right now, when you change the model, it changes how data goes in and out of the model. And what we worry about is the wrong data going in and then coming back out. And I know from our interactions with Lakera that, they have that Gandalf game where you can try and, break the models. And one of the most interesting things that I heard from talking to folks at Lakera was that every time an LLM that's behind Gandalf gets upgraded, what works to break the model changes. And so you might go through Gandalf and make it to a very high level with certain techniques and tactics, but then the next time, OpenAI's model changes, what breaks it might be completely different in terms of j the challenges. And so it's like a new product that we have to consider from a third-party risk standpoint every time they do an upgrade to the model.
So are you saying the defense? I mean, obviously, you're saying the attack has to change. That means defense has to change. So we have to learn how to defend all of again. But at the same time, the attackers will also have to learn how to attack in the new method. That's
Yeah,
interesting.
because it's funny. Like I've been, what Lakera does is they do defend against prompt injection attacks, and I've been watching people's explanations for what a prompt injection attack is change over time, because there's a tendency to want to analogize it to something in the past, and I think of it as a prompt injection attack is like me running a query against a search engine, but when my query goes into the search engine, my query is adding code to the search engine because of the interactive nature of it. And so it's like from an application security standpoint, anytime somebody puts in a query, they could be essentially change modifying your code.
It's not always though, because precisely because the reason that what you put in could change the model, the way that the model builders are doing is not like every time your prompt comes in, it goes into the main model. No, they actually have a something like cached for you with fine-tuning on top that does not go into the main model for a while because they want to protect the main model. But that's kind of an implementation detail. But I like the fact you're thinking about how the way we do security is different with these models versus with operating systems. So Tali, do you agree? Do you see it differently?
I don't know if I completely agree with every LLM release, right, or a new model that we have to completely change how we think about whether it's a detection or controls, right? It really depends on what's being released. And honestly, for most of enterprises, I don't think they care or even need to worry about it, right? They're struggling with the basics today. And it's not LLM security. They're struggling just to understand what the users use and how much data is leaking. So whether it's, OpenAI 4.0 or something else that's being released doesn't really impact them as much because they're still at the basic level of just visibility and detection there. There is some companies that we know of actually have to worry about things like LLM security. And every time there is new release, there is a possibility of controls not working anymore because the company might change how they think about different architecture or structure. So that's one. But most of enterprises don't have their own LLMs or deploy LLMs, right? What they will do is either just utilize public or enterprise versions of enterprise search like Glean, for example, right? Or use Gemini or OpenAI or Perplexity with the enterprise version, which has some security controls and guardrails built in, right? So for them, they think about risk very differently. They need to think about more about enterprise view risk like a third party. Where is my data going? When people try to summarize a document, right? Are we leaking PII or financial data or confidential data, right? Or those are the basic struggle. But then you also have the developer side of it, and not Copilot. We can talk about that separately, but people building applications now, right, that have AI functionality built in, or they're making calls to specific models, which could be their open source or publicly available ones. And there is new classes of vulnerabilities that we need to start thinking about. And trying to remember the term, I think it's called LAVA, language augmented vulnerabilities, right? Where it kind of it differs from traditional application vulnerabilities that we always worried about before, right? You can actually structure cross-site scripting now in a way that using language, right, that actually enables different classes of vulnerabilities that we worried about before. AI-powered chatbot, for example, can generate dynamic HTML that could inadvertently produce executable payloads, for example, right? Or other type of vulnerabilities like cross-site scripting. So AI now that's being embedded inside our code base also creates a different type of vulnerabilities that we had to worry about before. So you have like classes of risk and enterprises that need to worry about. There's a number of companies popping up in this space. You know, Joe, you talked about one. There is another company just launched yesterday, Striker. They came out of stealth mode. There's a few other startups that kind of look at this.
I'm an investor in Striker.
Oh, same here. Right? We're all investing in a couple of startups, right? And it's such a fast-moving space, and there's so much unknown there. I think we're going to see innovation only accelerate, both on the security side, in terms of how do we detect and protect, but also how do we use AI within security organizations to help us be more efficient, right? Because attackers are using it. We need to start using it also.
So,
There's so much to unpack there, but sorry, Joe, you go ahead.
no, you go. I just wanted to kind of turn it back on the two of you. So like if like I agree with Vitaly, a lot of the smaller companies that I work with is that first layer that you're talking about is just like get an inventory of what everybody's doing and make sure that the data is not leaking. That's job one for most companies. How do you think about like both of you apparently chose to invest in this company that I hadn't heard of. So you must be optimistic that people are going to move beyond that, like organizations are going to need to move beyond that, right? What gave you that optimism?
You gave me that, Joe.
Joe, it's your fault.
It's your fault.
How's that possible? I've never heard of this company. Now, I mean, it sounds like an amazing company if both of you would invest, but.
Not about the company per se, but about that organization's going to move beyond using AI to developing AI application. And remember, we were talking about Lakera, and I was asking you questions, and you said, look, the questions you asked were all about enterprise security views. But the minute people start writing AI applications, they're going to move to more product security views. And hence, things, guardrails and other detection, deeper detection and protection going to become more important. And Striker is sort of another a step beyond that. They really like their goal is to help people securing development of AI applications. And so that you're the one who set me on that journey, Joe.
I remember that conversation. It was over a year ago,
Yeah.
well before this podcast.
And you know, it's not about Striker here because there is other companies trying to kind of figure this space out. I think there is a group of enterprises, and there is more and more of them now, right? They're doing a lot more internal development. So build versus buy. Remember, we had the discussion in the last podcast about that. So there's a lot more enterprises doing build internally. And as the new AI culture starts evolving, a lot of companies starting to actually build applications that either work through APIs or other means, right, with AI, or they actually built in or embed AI functionality in the code base now. And that AI content could trigger unattended applicational behavior, right, which exposes data and a few other things and opens up this new classes of vulnerabilities we never thought about. So you have a number of companies that actually try to give you not just visibility in what's happening there, but also build guardrails around or controls to be able to detect those new vulnerabilities and control the data.
Let me take that for a moment. I'm sure you guys have seen the millions of AI coding tools, right? Vibe coding. Bolt can build applications for you pretty fast and probably get you 75%, 80% to completion, and then you have to do the rest. And then you have Cursor and Clang. These tools are, you bring in to do surgery on your code. And Cursor is pretty magical. I kind of tried it myself and, it's got it pops up code block suggestions and you can just click and say, I'll use this. I looked at it. I'm like, maybe this is a way we could start build secure code. What do you guys think? Am I too optimistic? Or is this maybe the beginning of that happening?
So I think you just took us on that transition from talking about securing the AI to using AI for security. Yes, I think there seems to be the hype side of it, which is, oh, AI is going to make the internet and the world more dangerous because the bad guys are going to use it. But I actually think that AI is starting to help the good guys just as much, if not more, because there are just so many things that as a good defensive team you're trying to do. There are just always more things than you can do and that you have the people for. And the best thing that models can do for us right now is get through that work a lot more efficiently. And that just helps us a lot. And so I am optimistic. And as humans, we get tired after looking at, a certain number of lines in a row. The AI doesn't get tired in the same way. And so just putting it to work, I think, is going to really help us. And we make mistakes as humans, and hopefully the AI will catch more of those mistakes than we catch ourselves. So I am optimistic that it will help the defenders more than the attackers.
And Vitaly, you agree?
I agree with Joe. I think there's two things here that I usually think about. One is from a copilot or code generation itself, right? Intrusively, we actually believe there is value. Now, let's put aside whether you can truly measure productivity improvements or not. We know that with AI coding, eventually, right, there's going to be more productivity. And maybe one day, close to, 90%+ of all code is going to be generated by AI. The challenge today is a lot of that code quality today is pretty poor, right? Because at least the first generations of those LLMs were trained on publicly available repos, where we know the quality from, at least from a security point of view, there is a lot of vulnerabilities in that code. So there have been a number of studies in the last 12 months where code generated by AI has actually a lot more basic vulnerabilities like SQL injection, cross-site scripting, and others, right? That comparing to human-based code. So on one hand, we see productivity increases from a developer side. But
you cited something. You said there's evidence or there's study that AI generated code is more vulnerable.
Yeah.
Where is that?
I probably won't be able to pull it out. There was a Stanford study done, I think, about either 6 or 9 months ago. I remember seeing there's a few others. Now, since then, new generation LLMs are improving. Right?
Yeah.
GitHub Copilot is a better quality. So just like everything else with every iteration, it's getting better and better. But we do have to invest more now on the security side around security. Think about CI/CD pipeline, right? Companies like SemGrep coming in and actually helping enterprises now to figure out the code, not just do the traditional dynamic and static code analysis, but just in time or near real time context provided to developers as they're typing code, right? Or is code being generated by AI? So we do right now have to invest more on a kind of traditional AppSec side to make sure that code quality is there. So humans still need to be in, or at least security in that loop. And the challenge is how do we continue to be non-blocking and continue to let engineering teams and business move fast, but also do it in a balanced, safe way. That's what the challenge for us is. We need more tooling. We need more products in the security space. And this is where Joe was saying AI is going to help us on the defender side because we can't scale this just by manual processes.
And I'm also really optimistic and excited about what's happening on the detection side. To me, like when I go into a company and we're helping build up the security, getting the enterprise basics in place are a given. But with smaller companies, I've had a hard time recommending to them that they invest in detection, because detection is, getting a SIEM. And then ha hiring detection engineers and doing analysis and alerting and all and then pulling the context. It's always been so manual. We've had generations of SIEMs and we've had SOAR and we've had all these tools. And at the end of the day, what we were really doing was saving a bunch of logs that we could look at after the incident and then see why we got compromised more likely than catch the lateral movement before the damage was done. I believe that with AI, we're going to be much better at detection. Thinking about the kill chain and like how the bad person moves laterally inside your environment, we're just going to be so much better at detection using AI than we've ever been able to be up to this point. The challenge was, we lived in a world of rules. And now we live in a world of models. And for models to work well, you needed to have known bad, and you needed to build the models against known bad over and over again so that they could recognize the no more known bad. And it was easy to do with spam, but hard to do with an APT because you don't have lots of examples of APTs moving laterally in your environments to model against. Now with AI, it's just like fundamentally a different game, and we have a much better chance of detecting that lateral movement.
What AI does is it gives you, I mean, in the past, as you said, Joe, we live in the world of rules. I mean, same with application development. You say, oh, I want to write this app, and I start with predefined logic, right? So I have to write these blocks, they stitch together this way. With models, you kind of don't. You're like, okay, I want this to do X, and you build however you want. And same thing with detection, right? So you want to educate the model that what looks bad and then unleash it on the in your environment, and it'll just report back what's bad, hopefully, without you specifically writing the rules. But today, I see a lot of challenges. I mean, the models, AI models today work on unstructured data a lot, right? But security data is semi-structured, right? So it's like transforming security data into a format that models can actually consume is not a given. I mean, this is down in the weeds of technology, but that is a challenge, right?
I think it's getting easier, not harder.
Well, I don't know. I think it's actually getting a little harder in the meantime, and then before it will get easier.
You know what's
Just
getting
because.
harder is there's so many niche solutions and so many players in this space because it's moving so quickly, right? We talked a little bit about this before. If you think about it from a third-party risk, on average, CISOs have what 50 plus different security vendors. And now with AI, we're actually seeing even more increase, right? Because there is a point solutions that actually solve specific problem. And that by itself is becoming a risk we have to manage.
So why is that the case, right? With AI, you think that you'll reduce the number of vendors, reduce the number of solutions, but in the short term here, it's going the opposite direction, right?
Eventually, we'll see that, right? And we're already seeing acquisitions. Look at Wiz, for example, right? I think there will be market consolidation in the next 2 years. It's just so new and innocent right now. And we're moving so fast. There's a lot of opportunities for a little startup to disrupt. Could be niche space, like we're talking about detection here in particular, right? Big platform players also trying to get AI built into their products for that reason. But platform teams like Palo Alto or Cisco's of the world, CrowdStrike's, they're big companies, right? Sometimes it takes a little while to pivot or get something to the market versus a very scrappy little startup with 5 to 10 engineers can get a prototype to the market much faster. And a lot of us are willing to spend time with those smaller startups because we can actually help them, not just directionally, they can meet specific problems that we might have on day one versus platforms have to address very broad range of risks and features.
Are we I think with AI as the backdrop, I think we're looking at the new crop of Palo Alto Networks and CrowdStrikes should come up in our lifetime in the next 2 to 3 years. I don't know who, but new companies that AI native, really understand the AI application environment to do security is those companies, their products will look very different than today's security products. You think?
I mean, that's an interesting proposition. We have seen, obviously with the recent acquisition of Wiz, that a startup can go to a very high valuation very quickly if they have a high quality product that gets massive adoption. But I think it would be a challenge, and it is. I do think it is the challenge that all of the AI related security startups are facing right now is when they come to meet with us and we are considering deploying them, if they show up and they say we're a prompt injection defense startup, we say, well, can you also stop our data leakage? And if they show up and say, we're a next generation DLP for AI, then we say, can you also do our prompt injection defense? And so, because we don't deploy security in a vacuum, we have to go over to the engineering team and say, hey, you team that's working on LLMs, we want to run some products in your environment that you've never heard of before. I've had CEOs say to me, it sounds like you're introducing more risk to my company than the rest of the engineering team because you're bringing all these random little products into our, inside our network. And so we don't want to bring five products in just to secure that LLM. We want to bring in one product. And so maybe they do have to grow into a company that has five solutions, not one point solution.
And I think it depends on your risk, right? What you're trying to solve for. Every enterprise is different. For some enterprises, going with a large platform player is sufficient, even though it's not best of breed, right? They might not do everything well, but they do it good enough for specific enterprises. For some other enterprises where their risk appetite or risk is much different, you might be willing to invest more because you need specific visibility or detection capabilities or ability to build guardrails controls that platform players are not doing as well today. But that's why I think there's going to be more consolidation, right? You have new crop of companies coming up pretty quickly. Wiz, of course, was one of the big ones. You got other ones, as you all know, like Cyeras, ChainGuards of the world. They're all playing specific market, and they all get asked the same question as Joe was saying, right? That's a latest DSPM or latest DLP solution. That's great, but can you also do this, right? And a lot of times answer is not yet. And there may be this little startup that actually does it. We start working with those startups and eventually they get acquired because the larger players now, the way they have to expand either acquisition or actually investing more in developers. And sometimes it's much faster to acquire smaller companies, at least at the beginning, right? So I think we're going to see that. We're going to see more consolidation. We have a lot of risk we carry with a lot of security vendors because a lot of them have privileged access, domain-wide delegation access. There is a lot of risk just by implementing those platforms.
Right. Yeah, that's one of my favorite reasons. Like, why am I in Paris? It's because I'm going to a security conference, and the thing I'm looking forward to is talking to the security practitioners who are going to be there, because I know they're going to be thinking about these issues in slightly different ways because they come from different industries and operate in different countries. And
I'm still trying to pull a business trip together for all of us. We can do our podcast somewhere. Someday. But like, I'm very inspired by this whole vibe coding thing, because I've been like experimenting with different tools, and I'm like, oh, this is amazing. So if you think about tools like Cursor, right? It's like it's a new IDE, and it'll suggest code, completing code, and will also vetting code for you at some level. Where does application security sit with something like this? Do you think there'll be a add-on into tool like Cursor, a plugin that as code's being generated or suggested, can do scanning in the back end? Oh, by the way, I also saw a demo and I was like kind of blown away. So it has it's a plugin to Cursor, and it's an agent that you're typing, and it knows to go and retrieve your PRD on the back end, and knows to retrieve your security policy document automatically, and then compare that with your code. And I was like, dude, that is amazing. Anyway, so I'm going off track. So things like that as a plugin, or maybe the platform Cursor itself will do it at some point. What do you think?
I don't know if Cursor would do it, but the larger players will, right? So you can look at GitHub as an example, right? They're already building a lot of security tooling inside to help enterprises because they know there is a problem and there is a risk. So the smaller players like Cursor, I don't know if they have to address our problem because there will be an ecosystem or marketplace to actually plug in and help in that space. But larger, call them platform players, probably will. Like GitHub's and other big repos, we're going to have to build some of that functionality in. Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, I was thinking about kind of like the ultimate extension of Chengxi's question to like, does AppSec go away? Like, do you stop having AppSec engineers? And I'm not ready to say yes to that. I just think that our job and the AppSec engineer's job becomes more enjoyable because you're spending less time going and retrieving those documents and things like that, and spending more time reading code and more time, tweaking things. And the interesting thing, is as someone, like Vitaly, I think about building security organizations, and when you build a team, you try and have your interns, your people who just got out of college or master's program, your people who are a few years in and are humming at like maximum capacity, and then the people who move to like that principal and top level engineering where they get to work on the really hard problems. Like, it's a lot of the lower level work goes away, and so how are we going to develop people to the principal engineer level? I mean, maybe they get to get there faster because they have less time, they have to spend less time on the grunt work side of it. That's the optimistic view.
Vitaly, you run a security organization. Do you think in 5 years your security organization at a place like Netflix will have the same number of people? Would it be more? Would it be less? I mean, I'm not picking on Netflix per se, but just in general, right?
I'll provide general answers in the industry, right? We haven't solved security in 40 plus years, longer. We're still basically dealing with the same problems we've been dealing for the last 30, 40 years. With AI, on one hand, we're going to get a lot more efficient. as the defenders, right? It's going to help us a lot. But maybe I'm just getting too pessimistic in my age, but I don't think security teams will go away. As Joe said, the jobs will evolve, right? Whether the size of security organizations will shrink or get larger, it's impossible to say, right? I think it goes back to the overall AI discussion, right? On one hand, some people think AI is going to replace every single job we have. On the other hand, it will just make us more efficient. So maybe we don't grow as fast in terms of pure end count of workforce. And it's probably going to be true for security teams, right? In some pockets, AI might actually make us a lot more efficient, and we don't need as many people going forward. But as companies continue scaling up, I don't think security functions are going to go away. It's just going to scale maybe sublinearly to the company's growth.
I think that security organizations are going to stay proportional to the rest of technology. I see a lot of companies where security is probably 10% of the tech investment, just as like a ballpark number. And I don't see it becoming less, and I don't see it becoming more. It won't become more because people who manage budgets won't want to see that happen. And I don't think we can let it become less because, I'm working with a bunch of fast-growing companies right now, and they're companies that are going from like 100 people to 500 people in 6 months. And when these fast-growing technology companies grow, the same type of security risks. So security risk comes from like velocity of change in many circumstances, and the gaps between things that are happening, and the tech debt that is built. And those things are not like tech debt's not going away, velocity of change is not going away, and gaps between directions that different functional groups in the company are running apace are not going away. And so like security is always going to be running along trying to like catch those things. Most of the difficult attacks we see like find the edge, find those little cracks, and the cracks aren't going away.
I see a problem brewing, right? So because the rest of the technology investment is actually slowing down because people are not hiring engineers as fast because we don't need as many software engineers, for instance. So even if security stays the same as 10% or whatever to the rest of the organization, but the rest of the organization is slowing down, that means security is not growing as fast. However, the rate of change is exploding, right? I have more new code now to secure because AI is writing them. So in the short term, between the rock and the hard place, right? Yeah.
Your question has the premise that hiring on other parts of the companies are going down. I like you mentioned earlier in this conversation that there are companies like these people saying I can build a $1 billion company with one engineer. That might be true, but so far that's the exception, not the rule.
Haven't you read the Salesforce said we're not hiring as many software engineers? Meta says we're not hiring as many software engineers because a lot of code is written by AI now. And so their investment in general technology is slowing down, right?
I think we have to be careful when we hear those numbers, right? They've been so much over hiring during COVID days when, there was very little cost when the interest rates were zero, right? That you could argue there is still a lot of fat or so. I don't want to use that term really, right? But there is a lot of over hiring that's happened over the years, and those large platform-based or hyperscaler companies that, yes, with the AI, it's helping them to get more efficient. But there's also a lot of reshuffling that, margins are shrinking, revenue growth is slowing. They're going to have to make changes. It might not have anything to do with AI or ability to generate code automatically, right? It's hard to tell what's real, what's not right now, because only thing we see is in the financial reports or the earnings releases, right? And behind the scenes, we need to really understand over time how much AI is helping and replacing.
Yeah, and the fast growing companies that are hiring really aggressively right now are not public, and we're not really talking about them. And the ones that I'm working with, they're not slowing down. They're not slowing down hiring. They're desperately hiring AI engineers. They're desperately hiring robotics engineers. We're like technology is moving from two-dimensional to three-dimensional right now with this explosion in robotics. That the capabilities require engineering disciplines that may be slightly different in terms of what we're hiring today than we're hiring 10 years ago, but the risks of putting robots in homes are it's something I've been working on with one of the companies right now. It's really fun to work on, but it's also really scary to think about. When you have robots that are washing your dishes and putting away the knives.
That can make their own decisions, right? As opposed to just like, taking it from here and put
Yes.
it there. I was at a CMU Carnegie Mellon event yesterday, and I don't know, Vitaly, did you make to the dinner last night with Encore and those
Yeah, I
folks?
did.
Yeah. So I had to miss it because I was at San Francisco for Carnegie Mellon event, and we had to it's an all-day event, and they showcased some of the startups coming out of Carnegie Mellon, and they put so much emphasis on robotics startup these days, and there are many of them, right? And it's really interesting because there's some is just like humanoids, and but others are like a little component of robotic system, but it's really important, like a material that you can like grab things really, really well. I love what Jill said, technology is becoming from two-dimensional to three-dimensional, right? Because we're not writing code anymore. There's other engineering principles being brought into the creation here, and that may be the saving grace, maybe that there will be new job opportunities created for different types of talent, right?
That's right. And I think that's a key takeaway, right? Which is we started this conversation talking about Pentiums and just, x86 platforms and the Moore's Law, right? Where it was every 18 months. Now it's accelerating so quickly. We're not talking about 18 months or even 6 months, right? There's something new continuously getting innovated and evolving almost every few weeks. And robotics is a great example where, there's companies been around for a long time working on robotics like Boston Dynamics, but with addition of AI, the acceleration is so massive, right? We're all struggling just to keep up from a technology perspective. So on one hand, jobs will change, but there is this completely new thing that's happening in a completely different dimensional way, right? That we have to start thinking about for as a security professionals. How do we help and scale there? There's going to be enough jobs for everybody. It's just they're going to look different, very different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The data implications are something that I just like my mind keeps exploding over because when you think about the LLMs have ingested all the data that's in all the data centers right now, but they can't control robots because the data of how a waiter or waitress navigates a restaurant and reads a person and decides whether to take their plate away and whether to ask them if they would like a water refill and all of those things, that data is not in a data warehouse yet. But for robotics to work in a restaurant, that data has to be collected and modeled against. And so in the same way that Teslas have been driving around collecting data on roads so that they can model self-driving, why is Meta giving away glasses that allow 3D data collection in 3D? Because that data isn't going to be incredibly valuable. And so the data, to kind of bring this conversation full circle, Jim's in New York for a data warehouse IPO, basically.
They started trading? Have they
Yeah.
started trading? No? Oh.
So, like, that's why we need more data centers, because there's a lot more data that hasn't been collected yet. And for us in security, our job is to protect data. And so there's going to be a lot more sensitive data to protect, whether we like it or not.
Jim's gonna be making a lot of money.
Let's
All
hope.
right, Jim. Let's hope so for Jim's sake and
Let's
for
hope
ours.
so too. All right. Well, thank you guys so much. We'll get this pushed out soon.